I'm Eric Thiel, and we've got another great live session for you. Joining me today in the JPR studios, singer-songwriter Lucy Wainwright Roach. Hi, welcome to JPR.
Thanks for having me.
So your father, Loudon Wainwright III, mother is Suzy Roach, your aunt is Sloan Wainwright, your half-brother is Rufus Wainwright, your half-sister is Martha Wainwright. I'm guessing you weren't likely to end up as a dentist.
Well, I tried not to be a dentist, but I tried to not do music. It seemed like they had that covered, which they do, of course. But then it happened anyway. So,
what did you try to do that wasn't music?
I went to college and then went to graduate school for teaching, and I taught elementary school for a couple of years.
Was that a conscious decision to move away from music and to not follow in the sort of family footsteps?
Yes. It was my great rebellion of my youth, was getting a master's degree and getting a job. I was really drawn to that kind of more traditional path at that time. I was like, enough with this music stuff.
Is that because of all of the things that you had witnessed and experienced the rest of your family going through in terms
yeah.
of travel and strange work hours and things
it
like that?
It was somewhat that. Although I loved being on the road as a kid, I think it was literally like related to the same thing that drives people in the other direction normally, just sort of a need to distinguish yourself somehow. So I distinguished myself for a little while and then...
So how long did you end up teaching school?
3 years.
What pulled you back out of that arena?
Rufus did.
Really?
I think he kind of had an inkling that perhaps what I needed was to go out on the road, and he brought me for a summer tour, and I sang a couple songs with him in that show. And then after that, I went back for one more year and then quit and started doing this. So he was the beginning of the unraveling of me having a regular job.
Hmm. I've listened to one interview that you gave where you talked about, at the beginning of you being a performer, being up on stage, not thinking that you were particularly good at it, and wrapping your head around the idea that you were singing and playing and performing to just one person. Which is actually a very similar thing to how radio works as well, as we on the air always try to focus about, you know, trying to communicate with just that one person and make that connection. Yeah. What kinds of things did you do to achieve that?
Yeah, my first few shows were really, really terrible, and I was awful. And then around the third show, I had a realization that all I really needed to do was talk normally, speak normally, like I would to in a conversation. And so once I got the hang of that, it completely released me from the panic. I think I was thinking that you had to kind of like build a myth of some kind. I'm really bad at that.
Like a stage persona or something like that.
Yeah, I'm so bad at that. So once I realized I could just be regular, then it was fine.
Was it difficult when you started making music to be surrounded by family that each in their own unique way had some amount of fame or prominence?
It was in some ways. I mean, it's benefited me in a lot of ways, but it also is overwhelming and crowded, and I spent a lot of time early on thinking like, oh, what would this person in the family think of this song, or what would they say about this? And again, I then had a realization that really nobody cares. And I don't mean that in a cruel way. I mean in a great way, which is like everyone's really busy doing their thing, and they're not worried about what you're doing, which is awesome because that means they're not scrutinizing your work.
Yeah.
You can just do it, and they're going to be like, that's nice. And then they're going to be like, anyway, back to my thing.
Lucy Wainwright Roach is my guest live in the JPR studios. The new album is called There's a Last Time for Everything. Information on the album and the previous album, which is called Lucy,
yep,
at lucywainwrightroach.com. What do you want to play first?
I'm going to play this song, Seek and Hide, from the record that, from the latest record. Yeah. I fell in love last year. It's not a thing I do a lot. Pack up all my lonely habits and give it all I got. And when the winter came, I thought I would be different, but I'm not. I'm just the same old sorry kettle calling black a spot. You gotta watch watch it all change. You gotta watch it all stay the same. I walk the morning shore to see what pieces I can find.
That is Lucy Wainwright Roach live on Jefferson Public Radio. It's music from the album There's a Last Time for Everything. This is Open Air on Jefferson Public Radio, a live session today with Lucy Wainwright Roach. Lucy, you said that Rufus was how you kind of got back into music. I'm assuming that you had made music as a young person before deciding that teaching was going to be your career path.
I had a little bit. I was a big music fan always and was like a ravenous listener.
Tracy Chapman.
Yes. Right. I was really into Tracy Chapman when I was six.
Are you now?
My bedtime music.
Are you now? She's still kind of awesome.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm totally into her now, still. It's a lifelong passion. In high school, I learned to play the guitar a little bit and had a best friend, and we used to sing together, and I went to guitar camp, which was a little bit of playing guitar and a lot of, like, strange teenage social interactions. And then I went to college and I sort of stopped. I kind of went into I did some booking for the college coffee house. I went into the businessy side of it a little bit, but I kind of walked away from the music part. Hmm.
It's interesting listening to you perform and the other members of your family perform, because you each have such unique voices. They're all different from one another. It's not like there's that familial kind of similarity.
If
you listen to Rufus or you listen to Martha or you, all of your vocal qualities are so very different, where you have a very sweet, beautiful voice. And I don't know that all that many people would say that about, like, Martha singing, for example, which has a lot more angst to it.
Yeah, it's actually a great, especially for us, the kid generation of us, we've been really lucky because we're different enough that we're not stepping on each other's toes at all. Like, we're all in different sort of categories of what we're doing. So that's great. And then we can kind of come together and do stuff and then go off and not be in each other's way. So
in addition to really starting out opening for Rufus and going out on tour, you've done a lot of performing with members of your family. Is that a comfort thing or a convenience thing or a combination of both?
At first, it was my very first show I ever did. I opened for my dad, and then he asked me if I wanted to go on a longer tour with him to England. And so that was just the first opportunity I had, which was a great first opportunity. It was a lot of really beautiful big places, halls in England, and great audiences, but also terrifying. And then since then, honestly, they have great audiences. And getting to open, I've opened for lots of people, family people and non-family people, and when you find someone who has an audience that wants to listen to what you're doing and has is like primed to listen to what you do, it's so great. And so mostly that's been my experience, like Rufus's audience, my dad's audience. So we've done a lot of that together. But it is certainly nice also, we're all on tour a lot, so a lot of the time we do spend together, we're working.
Stylistically, it has been written about your music that you turn happy things into dirges.
Yes, that's true. Yes, my mom and I were thinking of starting a band called The Dirges because it's sort of we were sort of feeling like a machine that transforms happy things into sad things.
Is there something intentional there, or does it just happen?
I like sad things a lot, and I also like a lot of more. I like to listen to sad things, but then I also am fans of a fan of music that's more upbeat and more produced. But when you take that kind of song and have me sing it by myself on the guitar, it just kind of, it gets sad. I don't know why. I don't know what that means.
Are you sad in your regular life?
Sometimes.
But not always?
Not
right? Like, obviously not,
not right
now.
Minute. Yeah, I feel pretty good right now.
Good. I'll take some credit for that. Lucy Wainwright Roach is live in the JPR studios. Her newest album is called There's a Last Time for Everything. Can we hear something else? What do you
sure.
want to play next?
This one is the title track from the new record. Met you when the days were ours. We've been handed all the moons and stars, and told go forth, your future's north, and your own breath will take you far. Well, some of that tale was so, and some of it we would outgrow, but side by side we rode that ride with each other always in tow. Everyone will always know you are a heart of mine. Between forever and one day there is the finest line. And I wanted to show you all the things I hid. I was just a kid and I never did. Era ends, a few moments left for us to spend. You're just not quite still mine outright, and we will never be here again. But everyone will always know you are a heart of mine. Between forever and one day, there is the finest line. To show you all the things I hid, I was just a kid and I never did. So one last chance to sing, we're changing on a prayer, a wing, not graceful or true, just me and you. There's a last time for everything. There's a last time. There's a last time. There's a last time. There's a last time for everything.
That is called Last Time, effectively the title track from the newest release of Lucy Wainwright Roach. There's a Last Time for Everything is the full length of the record. I guess that still counts as a title track,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, title track, but without giving it away all the way.
I want to talk a little bit about the album because you recorded it in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Why Nashville?
Well, all my previous recordings had been made in New York with my stepdad as the producer, Stuart Lerman, which was amazing and great, and he basically gave me the ability to start out doing this by working on my albums. And but when this one came along, I actually didn't have enough songs for a record, and I was kind of complaining to my friend Jordan about it. Very productive thing to do. And she lives in Nashville, and she said, why don't you come down and we'll do a couple of songs. And I ended up kind of locking myself in my house and writing enough for a record, and then we did it at her house in her basement, and in about 8 days.
When you do put yourself in that kind of situation, do the songs come quickly and easily?
No. It's definitely an argument with myself. I think when at another time in my life, I was much more romantic about it. Like, you know, I would sort of feel a lot of feelings and check about the cycle of the moon and whatever, and then like write a song. But that wasn't happening, you know, and I needed some songs. So then I tried another approach, which is just lock yourself up and make yourself do it. And I wouldn't allow myself to leave the house each day without writing a song, which usually took the whole day. Like, I would just sit there and, like, argue with myself about it all day.
And what percentage of them would you say turned out sad?
Oh, all of them. I once tried to write a cheerful song, but I don't even perform it anymore because it's too embarrassing.
How does recording a record in Nashville end up making it sound different than if you had recorded it in a city that's not known as having its own vibrant musical scene?
Well, for one thing, Jordan, my friend who produced the album, all the people that she knows, for the most part, are musicians, and she knows I might know a couple of people who play drums. She knows 20 people who play drums, and she knows what their strengths are and what they would be perfect for, and this song would be great for this person. And it was just a real, like, treasure chest of her contacts and people who she was fond of working with. And for me, it was a great opportunity to kind of let her do her thing and have her take her approach with the songs, because I didn't know any of the people, so I just sort of took her word for it.
With the album coming together in such a short period of time, do you enjoy making a record in that way? Now, looking back on it, because are you a tinkerer, I guess? Because some people will write a song and they'll record tracks, but then they'll just tweak it and tweak it for weeks or months before it's quote-unquote finished, whereas other people can just sort of, you know, lay it down once and just move on.
Yeah, I had previously spent a longer time making the records, which is great and very fulfilling and fun and creative in a certain kind of way. And then this was totally different. It was like there was not time to second guess at all. You had to go with your gut. And that turned out to be totally harrowing, but also great. And I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, as an independent artist, where was that time crunch coming from? Just a window of opportunity to work with the people you wanted to work with?
Yeah, just between, she tours with different musicians and I tour, and we just had a certain amount of time, and we wanted to get it done, and it was somewhat self-imposed and somewhat work-imposed, and it ended up, it could have just been a nightmare, but it ended up being kind of magical and fun, so it was great.
Lucy Wainwright Roach is my guest live here on Jefferson Public Radio. The album's called There's a Last Time for Everything. Her website is lucywainwrightroach.com. I know you have a penchant for musicals. How far back does that go?
Very far. My dad used to take me to musicals when I was a kid, and I really like them. I'm just going to go right out and say it.
Is that something that you would participate in some form or fashion?
I would love to be in a musical so much. I don't really have the voice for that sort of Broadway kind of singing, but, you know.
Do you have the hands, though?
I don't have the... I'm not much of a dancer, so we're sort of eliminating all the ways that I could do it, but...
And your songs are sad.
Yeah. Maybe there'd be something, though. You know, if somebody, like, does a musical, like, say, about a folk singer, I could do that. I'm available for that.
Now, we had talked before we went on the air about what song you might want to rap with.
Yeah.
Did you decide on one?
I decided on a song from Hair.
Okay.
I could sing this song in Hair, like, for example, if someone was casting Hair.
Right. You could just contact the station and
totally.
We'll connect you and them, right?
Yeah.
So what is the song?
The song is called Frank Mills, and actually on the topic of songwriting, I don't know if this is true, that it was the text of the song was lifted from an ad in the newspaper. And it just goes to show you can make a song out of any old thing. I met a boy called Frank Mills on September 12th, right here in front of the Waverly. But unfortunately, I lost his address. He was last seen with his friend, a drummer he resembles George Harrison of the Beatles, but he wears his hair tied in a small bow at the back. I love him, but it embarrasses me to walk down the street with him. He lives in Brooklyn somewhere and wears this white crash helmet he has, golden chains on his leather jacket, and on the back are written the names Mary and Mom and Hell's Angels. I would gratefully appreciate it if you see him, tell him I'm in the park with my girlfriend, and please tell him Angela and I, we don't want the $2 back.
That is Lucy Wainwright Roach live here on Jefferson Public Radio. If you're interested and you'd like to hire her for an upcoming musical, an onstage part, a production part?
Yeah.
Really?
Anything.
Anything that would get you involved.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about what's next for you. What are you working on currently? Because we talked about this being sort of the quote-unquote new album, but it's actually been out for quite some time.
Yeah, it's been out for a year this week, and I am now working on a I'm writing for my next album, locking myself in my room, writing for my next album, and also working on a record with my sister, Martha, which is kind of a thing we've never done before. We haven't ever collaborated before. So it's sort of a dark lullaby album, we think. We just started last week, so.
In a way that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, it would be really strange if it was cheerful, if we tried to make it cheerful.
Are these going to be songs that you are penning, or have you found things in catalogs that you want to try to revisit and make your own?
So far, they're all songs that we've found. Old songs, songs that we knew, songs that we didn't know, suggestions from people.
Where do you look to find things like that?
Well, we knew some of them, and then we sort of... we went through some old mixtapes because we had,
really?
Yeah, she had some tape that had a bunch of songs on it that she thought might be good. And we found one on there that was sort of a like lullaby about a hobo who's, you know, got nothing, you know, cheerful things like that for the children,
for the kids.
Yeah.
Do you have a timeline for that project?
Well, we did a week of rehearsing.
Should release it for Christmas,
yes,
really.
Yes, it's very. I think I'm going to go back up in December, and we're going to work on it again. So probably sometime in 2015, it'll be out and done. And
looking forward to that.
Scaring people.
Well, this record is beautiful. Congratulations,
thank you.
And thank you for coming by and visiting with us.
Thanks for having me.